cutting through an overload of information to get to the heart of the story. This is The Point.
When the winds of change blow, what do? Build walls or windmills? German Chancellor Olaf Scholz just wrapped up his three-day visit to China on Tuesday, a trip which German media Die Welt describes as both his longest and most important foreign trip since taking office some 3 years ago. He had a packed schedule, and his delegation was nothing short of impressive with environment, agriculture and transport ministers, but also executives from big firms, including BMW, Benz and Siemens. But the trip came as Brussels announced earlier this month an inquiry into Chinese-made wind turbines, on top of another investigation into Chinese-made new energy vehicles since last October. Is Scholz trying to have his cake and eat it, meaning promoting German businesses in China while being in sync with Brussels? If so, how can that work? Was this visit to China a damp squib, like some are saying? Welcome to The Point, an opinion show coming to you from Beijing. I'm Li Xin. I'm pleased to be joined in the studio by Professor Liu Baocheng, Dean of the Center for International Business Ethics at the University of International Business and Economics. From Shanghai, by Michele Giraci, former Undersecretary of State of Italian Ministry of Economic Development, now adjunct professor of finance at New York University, Shanghai. And from Nevada, the U.S., by William Lee, Chief Economist and Executive Director at the Milken Institute. Welcome, gentlemen. We had a German guest, but last minute he felt sick, so he couldn't join us, which is a pity. But nevertheless, let's try to unpack the topic. Professor Liu, let me go to you first. Yes. Scholz is the first leader of an EU member state to visit China this year. Is there something to be read in there?
Well, I think it's a very sensitive period where there has been a lot of noise with regard to decoupling, de-risking, and whether China is dependable anymore, and whether the businesses are really relocating from China to other places. And also given the Ukraine crisis that is still going on, which the EU, particularly Germany, has a very high stake on whether Chinese attitude is going to impact the geopolitical situation, hence the economic engagement with China, and all of which the type of clouds that needs to be dispersed with the trust building, and hence trust the visit is there to help to disperse some of the doubts and clouds, and also to reassure not only the Chinese government, but also the German and also European businesses that decoupling or even de-risking doesn't really solve the problem. And only by enhancing communication in which the trust building can be further consolidated with China, and the commitments with China and also with the Asian strategy, and that's the way to go to address some of the challenges that we commonly face in terms of the climate change issue, green transformation and digitization. So this is really a very important trip, and where Chinese government pays a lot of great attention to it, and also the world has been watching, as you mentioned, to which direction the wind is going to blow, and whether you are building walls or whether you are taking the advantage and build the windmills.
It's a very important visit, of course, because China is the second largest economy and Germany is the third largest economy and most important economy in Europe. It's been a very interesting itinerary. It's basically a big triangle, right? He started in the southwestern Chinese city of Chongqing, and then he went to Shanghai, which is in eastern China. And then last day, he went to Beijing to have talk with political leaders, namely the Chinese President Xi Jinping, where they had talk for 3 hours, and they also had a walk in the Diaoyutai State Guesthouse, which is a rather rare scene. Michele, I assume that you've been watching what they have been saying, the two leaders have been saying about bilateral ties and issues of common concern. Did they say anything about de-risking, and did they mention Brussels?
Yes, the way I have interpreted the discussions and the role of Scholz is to... I want to do a step back. In Europe, there is a little bit of a fight. It's not just between EU and China. So it's more about between European governments and the European companies. So it's almost a vertical, I call it a civil war, between what the governments say and do, especially European Union Commission, and what companies in Europe would like to do. The European Union politicians tend to raise voices against China and depict it as a problem, as a challenge, and they only look at one side of the equation. The companies instead want to do business. They care a little bit less about geopolitics. They want, of course, that all the tensions in the international arena subsides. Everyone wants the wars to end. Everyone does not welcome trade wars. And so Scholz is in a very unique position because he sits in the middle and trying to bridge these two worlds. He does not probably have the status and charisma and the strength of Angela Merkel. He's not as weak, however, as other European government leaders. And so he is trying to carve a role for himself and for Germany to basically bridge this disconnect in this internal fight between European leaders, government leaders, and European companies. And of course, coming to China, talking to Xi Jinping, if I may paraphrase, he says, do not listen too much to what Ursula von der Leyen, the Commission President, says. Do not listen too much to these white papers about China being a systemic rival, because we, German Inc., only in 2023 have invested $13-14 billion in various sectors, auto, chemicals, and so on. So we do want to do business. We do trade with each other $100-150 billion. We are pragmatic. Our economy, German economy, is weak. We have now access to more expensive energy since we cut off our supplies from Russia. We are a manufacturing country that cannot decouple from anyone in the world, let alone with the largest economy that is both a customer and a supplier. So Scholz is kind of trying to, and that's why he's the first leader to come in 2024, not by chance. He's trying to bridge the tensions between Europe and China by being more of a almost a CEO rather than a prime minister. So going down to the pragmatism of doing business rather than the ideology that is now pervasive and in my view very negative in Brussels. Mm.
Mr. Li, do you see Scholz trying to walk a tightrope between Brussels and China? And is this trip going to provide some clarity on some of the murky issues that we're talking about, for instance, the new energy cars?
Well, I certainly hope so. One of the things that we have to recognize is that the winds of change are very strong, and they change not only individual countries and the economies and the fortunes of individual countries, but also the nature of the trade relationship between Europe and China has changed over time. China has always been a very strong trading partner for all of Europe. Europe has benefited from a lot of consumer goods that China's exported, benefited by the solar panels that China's exported, benefited by this electric vehicles that China's exported. But Germany has a very special role in Europe. It is also the manufacturer of capital goods. And in the past, China's relationship with Germany is that they depended on Germany to have capital goods to be able to make a lot of consumer goods that they exported. Now, China's gotten to the stage of development where they are developing their own capital goods. And Germany is having the challenge of having to find new markets. They have to find consumer products that will be appealing to the Chinese consumer, as well as industrial products that China doesn't have, and those are getting fewer and fewer in between as China develops. So the challenges for Germany is to change its relationship with China in a way that acknowledges that China has emerged in the developed economy status. They become a major industrial force, and very much like Germany, China's manufacturing sector is well over 25% of GDP, and it even overshadows Germany's share of manufacturing and GDP, which is only about 20%. So I think the nature of change is being recognized, and I think the negotiations that are going on, and I think you pointed out very clearly his itinerary is to recognize President Xi's attempts to industrialize the West by going to Chengdu and Chongqing, and also recognizing the importance of Shanghai as a trade port, and finally going to Beijing and saying, we need new policies, new trade policies, to be able to allow China to be good at what it's doing, but also contain some of the excesses that we are seeing in the European markets, because China has become so good at what it's doing. Many of the goods are being shipped to Europe at costs that are way below what we could possibly right. build similar products. And I think that competition is something that the Germans want to clarify and say, look, mm-hmm. we want a level trading, a level playing field here, and let's define what a level playing field really is.
Mm. Well, if you look at the headlines in Germany in the media, it's quite a different tone. For instance, this reoccurring theme that China is trying to divide and rule, you know, China is trying to drive an edge among European countries and conquer them one after another. Germany being one of them. Professor Liu, how do you see that kind of mentality or perspective? Because obviously Scholz is not here just to be done something. He is doing something for Germany's interest as well.
Well, when your perception is really beaten by reality, you always feel that the type of fear. And as a matter of fact, it's a very natural course when China manages its own economy and handling international relations in a peaceful and also mutually beneficial approach. And then this is really a natural growth. When you really talk about the word conquest or conquer or even neo-colonization, that's something totally detached from what China is doing. And they what China is engaged in, either in terms of construction projects, in terms of the export of finished products, import of the raw material from Latin America, from Africa, etc., is totally conducted on a voluntary basis where the general consent is really sought by the discussion and communication. So therefore, more of the European countries, particularly the central European countries, are engaged with China in those mega projects. It's really the choice on both sides, which really see that it is going to be mutually beneficial, and particularly in the area of infrastructure development and also the investment towards the frontier, the use and application of those technologies like the electronic vehicles, etc. And so this is totally really the choice of the people, and none of them are really silly enough to engage with someone who is really bullying or trying to predate the entire country or the consumers. Yes, there is competitive pressure, but whether you really come up with the right type of strength to deal with the competition. And this is something that is really a wake-up call to many of those inertias that is going on in the business community.
And in the media.
And of course, in the media. And media would like to exaggerate, but it is really the rationality that really counts in streamlining the prospect that both sides, and also on a global basis, where we're going to harvest from collaboration instead of trying to demonize each other.
And Professor Liu, just want to follow up very quickly. When you talk about the global benefits that we are going to harvest, are you talking about China and Germany in particular, and probably other Western countries as well in a multilateral sense?
Yes, I think definitely, because this is really the basic structure the European writers have been promoting by the trade. You can really promote division of labor in which the specialization is promoted to service the common good and by exercising comparative advantage of each other. And yes, China was seen as the comparative advantage in the supply of materials, in its demographic dividend. Now China is now going forward with the new quality productive forces, and that's something that some of the media and also the competitors feel rather uncomfortable, because the status quo is now being broken, and now it is for them to really to readjust reality and collaborate on a different level with China in different sectors. And this is something that can also spur their own competitiveness by stepping up innovation, both on technology and also on the institutional management issues. So instead of blaming China, why do you really change? Well, China is changing for the better. And why don't you really change by yourself to adjust with the new reality? So that's something that I would really wanted to point out.
On the political side, there is something quite interesting which caught my attention, which is, of course, the 3 hours of talk between President Xi Jinping and Chancellor Scholz, but also a walk in the park in the Diaoyutai State Guest House during the last day of talk after they had the official sit-down meeting. Normally, this is preserved for state leaders in the United States. For instance, it hasn't really happened so much between leaders of China and Germany. Michele, is this going to make a difference? What do you think the design behind such an arrangement really is?
No, I think it's very, very meaningful and very important, and it shows that the relationship between President Xi and Chancellor Scholz maybe is also trying to be improved also on a personal level. Let's remember the walk in Guangzhou was also with President Macron of France last year. And if my memory is correct, these are the only two leaders, European leaders, that enjoyed not just a formal meeting between, you know, behind closed doors, which is itself 3 hours is already very long, but also this more informal way. And this is very important. And that means that China puts its weight on the relationship with France and Germany. If I may say, a walk in the park would not happen between President Xi and President von der Leyen. And this is very important because China recognized, and rightly so, that the relationship must be carried on a bilateral basis between the leaders of one country and leaders of another country, not so much with the leaders of the European Union, that in reality does not do foreign policy, it only does trade policy. It looks at internal market issues, but it does not have a mandate in the Treaty of Lisbon, really, to engage with the foreign leaders on matters of international politics and so on. So China leadership understands that they need to do a bottom-up approach, that you are right, the media in Europe complain about, because they do understand that at the end of the day, even within Europe, we are competing with each other. So Italy, France, Germany, United Kingdom and Holland, we all want to do business with China. And we do know that one more bottle of Italian wine means one bottle less of French wine. So there is a race between European leaders, of course, to be nice to China, that is at the same time a competitor in certain industry, but at the end of the day, the biggest customer of our exports, one of the biggest customers. I tell you, China is the fourth largest importer of Italian goods. And it's one of the biggest, of course, for Germany and for France, which have also investment in China. So very important, this bilateral relationship between leaders of country. And if I want to like smooth a little bit the worries, the European Union inquires onto electric vehicles, anti-dumping. It's something that if I was, let's say, BYD, I would not worry much about, because this takes 18, 24 months. And by then, the market and the consumers and the company that buy those goods from China will make decisions that will dominate the you know, the political will of the European Commission, which, by the way, will change in June.
Let's wait and see on that front. But again, focusing on Scholz's visit, this is only his second trip to China, which seems to be different from the previous leader Angela Merkel, who visited China many more times. And last time Scholz visited China in November 2020, where he stayed only for 11 hours and only in Beijing. Mr. Li, basically, last time he was here, but he wasn't really here. Do you think this trip, having seen China with his own eyes in person for 3 days, you know, taking the trains, taking the flights, going on the street, going on the boon, talking to students, how important is that for changing or for really understanding China?
One of the things that the German people have always understood is the importance of China as a trade partner. But as I said, China has been the recipient of German machinery in the past. And I think what Chancellor Scholz's trip this time is telling him is that China is quite capable of making its own capital goods and capital machinery. And Germany must find a way of finding new markets here or shipping more advanced goods to China that China would need to bolster its own industrial capacity. One of the things that we have to recognize, I think that's very important, is that in the talks behind the doors for 3 hours, one of the things that Chancellor Scholz must have brought up is the concern that the EU has expressed about how the Chinese capital goods industry and electric vehicle industry and the solar panel industry has been able to take enormous market share in Germany and in the rest of Europe. A lot of the European countries, especially the smaller ones, have huge balance of payments deficits with China. And the claim is that while China has a comparative advantage in many of these industries, the way they got it was through huge subsidies, state subsidies, that gave China that advantage and continues to give China that advantage. That's the line of argument that a lot of the European press is taking. And I think Chancellor Scholz is taking this opportunity to explain how it is that the German and Chinese government can work out a deal whereby both countries can enjoy the levels of comparative advantage that their governments have given their industries.
Well, let's talk about that. I was going to raise that later in the show, but since you mentioned that this, the overcapacity or overproduction, whichever word you use, and that's also very much the words of U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen when she was visiting in China. Professor Liu, really, are we looking at overcapacity, overproduction, or is just exports?
Well, it's a matter of perspective. When the market is really isolated, if we really make only for China, yes, we need to reconsider the picture and adjust the production capacity. And now if we look at the whole world as a marketplace, for example, in the terms of e-vehicles or new batteries, this is not really enough yet because, whether you are really competitive enough and whether you are open enough to really to embrace the world marketplace and also streamline a stable supply chain. And that's something that's extremely important. Redundant capacity or excessive capacity is handled normally by the low quality production, but with large volume. But now China is really learning as how we can really increase the quality and make it more competitive. I think what Yellen and many other European leaders are pointing to China is that there are two issues, whether there is excessive subsidies, which means that's artificial competitiveness that Chinese businesses are really enjoying. And the other is that whether the industrial capacity is handled by market competition or by state manipulation. And I think in that regard, China can also do a better communication with the rest of the world. And by boosting its own industry, particularly towards the new frontier in terms of the radical transformation for high quality manufacturing, and the businesses does need a push. And also the fact that China has already wound up the subsidies to many of those industries, particularly at the last mile, long ago. And this is something that's more left on to the market competition. So therefore, by competing with factors of production, and now by competing with management and also marketing capability, the redundant capacity can also be revisited from which perspective. you're really looking at the whole issue.
Mm. Well, President Xi said this issue must be seen from an objective and dialectical view. I'm sure the Germans, having their strong philosophical traditions, they may be able to go further into that. But I do want to mention the trip Mr. Scholz had in Chongqing, where he visited a German invested partnership on hydrogen development. He learned about hydrogen powertrain products and fuel cell powertrain solutions and experienced the assembly of hydrogen fuel cell power modules. He also visited a German polymer maker, Covestro's Asia-Pacific Innovation Center in Shanghai. Michele, it doesn't mean that Germany really is eyeing China's cutting-edge innovation power in the new energy sector.
Correct. We know that Germany, for example, the auto industry is, of course, heavily invested in China, and they do see China as a competitor. We also have to remember that we have a European Union push to a green transition, new electric vehicles, new energy generation. And so, of course, like other guests have said, it is now a world where probably Germany also needs to learn from development in these technologies that take place in China and imports back technology, just like, for example, China imported technology in high-speed rail from France and partially also from Germany. Now, the two powers are, of course, much more balanced. China is leading in the world in many of these new technologies. And this is something that visiting and seeing with his own eyes, he can go back to Berlin and describe it in a much more articulated manner than maybe experts or
and
some
German
of the media
companies,
who are only...
Yeah, sorry for interrupting. And German companies are chipping in China's innovation power because these centers are invested by German companies.
Correct, because they do see that the one way to hedge the risk is not to compete head-to-head, but to be part of Chinese success. So if China emerges and develops new technology, then a share of that, maybe profit, know-how, goes back to Germany in terms of that equity investment that the German company have done. So they're very smart. So all this money that Germany puts into China is also to pull the export, but also to be part of this new, let's say, leading world power in technology innovation. Mm-hmm. So they would benefit. My Italian company would also have to invest into China and take advantage of this growth.
Be part of the other so that you can be part of the change. And with that, we come to the end of this edition of The Point with me, Liu Xin. As usual, you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter using the handle Liu Xin in Beijing. You've got The Point.